Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordechai Joseph. We're now in lesson 30, and we'll continue from where we stopped last time. Jesus Christ was, in essence, and we're dealing with the centurion, the Roman centurion, a Gentile, a non-Israelite, yet a man who feared God, who feared the law, who obeyed the law of God to the degree that he understood it. Obviously, a member that went, a member of the community, but not or the community of Israel, that went to the synagogue. That's where he learned about the law of God, you see, because a lot of Gentiles used to go to the synagogue, and here it is, not only a soldier, but a centurion that was of another spirit. And God obviously was dealing with this man, you see, as Peter later on said to another centurion, of the truth I perceive, that God is not a respecter of persons. Wherever he sees people, in every nation and tongue, who have fear of God, you see, and tremble at his word, he has respect for them. See, this was one person in that category, you see. You know, some people, don't see that. They're thinking, only our own clique, God deals only with our own people and nobody else. And they become haughty and arrogant, and they want to monopolize everything to themselves. Well, these are not genuine servants of God. And this servant had a perfect knowledge of the nature of God in terms of the authority, and therefore he could have this kind of authority, which to begin with he had an advantage, being a military man who understood what authority is all about. You just say it and it's done. No playings, no playing with it, no yes, if, and but, no arguments, no nothing. And recognizing who that being was, that he is the ultimate in authority, you see, not a human authority, he told him, you don't even need to come to my home. All you have to say, just, do it, and it'll be done. He says, I have my own experience in that. I'm a military man. I'm a man under authority, and I understand it. I tell my servants, my soldiers, just go and do this, and it's done. I don't need to worry about it. So because of that, because he was a man of obedience, therefore he had faith, and the two are linked. And some people think, I'm just going to live by faith alone. If you are not obedient, you have no faith. You have a phony faith. You have a false kind of faith, not a real one. You see, you have a superstitious kind of faith. Not a faith that comes from the knowledge, I will do the will of God and do those things which are pleasing in His sight. Therefore, I don't need to worry about it, that when I know I need something that is good, God is not going to deny me that. You see? That's why He told His people many times, you have a little faith. You see? You don't know the nature of your Father because you are not obedient. That was a problem with the people of Israel and still is to this very day. And oftentimes there are people out there, non-Israelites, who are putting the children of Israel and have done that, for a long time. They put them to shame by the nature of faith that they had. And oftentimes even, in false gods, not even real ones. You see? And this kind of a person was pleasing in the sight of God because they feared God and trembled at His word, and therefore he understood Him, and he was obedient to the degree that he understood. There's a lot of background here. And also, you study that, you don't know what you're reading. It just becomes sort of an ethereal kind of a teaching, sweet, nice story. And it's not. And so, we read here, when Jesus, verse 10, heard it, he marveled. And he said to those who followed him, his own people, his own wife, that should have been faithful and obedient, he tells them, assuredly I say to you, I have not seen or I have not found such great faith, not little faith, but great faith, not even in Israel. And that's what he's saying about his own wife, unfaithful wife oftentimes. The whole history of Israel is that of unfaithfulness and very little faith and obedience. And to this very day it's the same. The people of God who should know the most, who should know the best way, who should know better than others, are the most obedient, that is disobedient and unfaithful to God. That's what he's saying here. He marveled at that. Here's a person that was not raised on the law like every Jew was, or an Israeli before that, who should have known the mind and the nature of God, and this person understood it because of his military background, and also he had another spirit in him. You see? And so he understood it and had that kind of faith. And that made the Creator marvel. And so in essence, he was putting down his own wife. You don't have that kind of a faith. Shame on you. That's the same to this very day. How many of us have this kind of faith? absolute faith. Why? Because of absolute obedience. That's why the two are linked. So anybody who thinks that he can live just by faith is a deceitful person. Self-deluding, you know, a liar. There's no such a thing. You do not obey God, he's not going to do what you want. You don't live by the rules of the game, so to speak. You're not going to benefit from it. You know, if you have a relationship with a bank and you constantly disobey their rules, you don't pay on time. You see, you give them, you write a check that doesn't have enough coverage for it. Well, after a while, they're not going to deal with you anymore. You see? And so when you need to go and ask for a loan or whatever it may be, you don't have faith. You see? Why? Because you've been disobedient all this time to the rules. That's as simple as that. Only a person who is absolutely obedient has absolute faith. There is no other way to have faith. And that's the only way you increase your faith, by going, as Christ gave in another example, over and above and beyond what you're supposed to do. And then God will always be there for you. That's the reason he's going to make a new covenant with Israel and Judah and going to put the law in their hearts so they can be absolutely obedient and so they can have absolute faith and relationship with him. And as he said, even before you call upon me, I will answer. Just like he did always with Jesus Christ. So whenever Jesus Christ sometimes, needed to perform a miracle, you read that. He said, he did not even need to ask God. He just said, well, I know that you always hear me. Why? Because Christ had absolute obedience, and he was obedient unto death. And yet we do not follow in his footsteps and claim to be, Christians or members of Christianity when we despise his law that will teach us how to be totally obedient to him, and then we want the benefits. You see, that's how insane we are. That's what he said. I have not seen, in Israel such faith. And I said to you that many will come from east and west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. It's a kingdom of heaven. It's not a kingdom in heaven. As the fools later on began to teach everybody else, because they brought it from their own pagan teachings, and then they injected that, some of them injected that into even the Jewish community that never believed that. You see, they always knew that God is coming on this earth, going to reign on this earth, going to reign over Judah and Israel and Jerusalem. He's going to be king over all the earth. You see, that's the kingdom of God. That's the kingdom of heaven, which is coming from heaven. And then heaven itself, heavenly Jerusalem, is descending to this very place where physical Jerusalem is, and the tabernacle of God will be among men, as you read the end of the book in Revelation. You see? And yet lies and deceptions have been there ever since. And all these communities, the so-called Judaism, community of Judaism, community of Christianity, and the community of Islam, follow this lie which they've had from the pagan sources, all around them. Because even Islam, when it began, Muhammad never thought of going to heaven. He never believed in it. And he repeated that statement many, many times. That all men, when they die, they go to the grave and they await there for the last trump. You see, when the last trump shall sound, of course he had some information there from the Jewish and Christian community in terms of the faithful among them at the time. So in his day, you see, in the 6th century, still there were many genuine followers of Christ on both sides. You see, even though the Jews don't call themselves followers of Christ, but they're followers of the God of Israel, and that's Christ, same person. See, a little confusion there. But both of them, both communities there, in that area at least, where Muhammad was, and other areas in the east, in contrast to the west, were more pagans, they still retain that knowledge and understanding. You die, you go to the grave, and you wait there for the resurrection. That's what Muhammad taught. You can read the Quran from beginning until the end, you'll find dozens and dozens of statements about that. And yet look what they believe in today. That's the reason why you have the suicide bombers. They believe that pagan lie, that, you die, you go to heaven, you go to paradise, and have those, the Quran said 32 virgins or 30 virgins. Now they claim 70. I guess 30 is not good enough for them. They upped it up to 70, and people, give their life for it in vain. They're not in paradise. You see, they're not in heaven. They're in the grave awaiting the resurrection. And so that's what he's talking about. This kind of people are not going to be in the kingdom when he comes. What does that mean? That's the end of them, no more? That's not what he means. Unless you know the entirety of the book, you don't know what it means. You go to Revelation, you're told what it means. That the rest of the dead did not live until, you see, until the 1,000 years were over. And then there is going to be the second resurrection, and all these people that lived before that and died and were not allowed into the kingdom at the coming of Christ, you know, let's say those who are alive today in this generation, well, the generation that is going to see the coming of Christ, you see, they're going to come back in the second resurrection, and God is going to open their eyes and hearts, is going to cleanse them and remove the darkness, remove the blinders, the scales from their eyes, and he's going to give them another heart to know him, and he's going to put his law in their hearts and put his spirit in them, you see. That's the end of the story. A lot of people in their ignorance think, well, that's the end of it. You know, you didn't accept Christ, you're all gone, you're all in hell, burning in hell forever. You see, those were demonic doctrines that are still being taught to this very day by so-called followers of Christ, you see, and they are not. They are people that Christ never knew. And they are not his servants. And they can claim all they want that they are. And one of these days they're going to have a rude awakening. You know, and going to be shamed before all and spit on their faces by all because they've deceived many, especially the leadership among them. You see, people spit in their faces for all the lies that they have taught them. And so he says, I say to you that many will come from east and west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. You see, these are the men to whom the promises were made, the covenants were given to, and Paul said long after that, that those promises and covenants still belong to Israel and not to the Gentiles. And anybody who wants to follow Christ must become a part of the commonwealth of Israel, or else he's cut off from God and the promises and the covenants. You see, there is no other way. You've got to study the whole book and prove it, you know, and read what it says there and don't listen to men. You see, a lot of liars out there that claim to be the servants of God or the servants of Christ. And so he says, all these people are not going to be sitting there, but the sons of the kingdom, you know, those who are obedient to the law, those who are faithful, you see, the sons of the kingdom will be, you know, in the kingdom, but in contrast, he says, you know, they will sit with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but in contrast to those, because there are other sons of the kingdom, will be cast out into outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. You see, what's outer darkness? You're going to be in the grave, awaiting the resurrection. They're going to go into hell, you know, and scream and yell and cry and all that. And those who totally reject the law of God, the teachings of God, the will of God, they will be burned in a lake of fire that is going to set at his coming. You see, and there is going to be another one after the second resurrection of a different sort. You've got to read the entirety of the book to understand all that. And they'll be zapped and wiped out. You see? And unless you know the entirety of the story, you're not going to understand it, obviously. And so you read these kind of things and you got your own ideas. And you know, you concoct your own doctrines. And that's what people have been doing for the last 2,000 years. So he's warning his own people. You better repent or else. Ultimately, he said, if you will totally reject it. He's not talking about those who are blind and confused, don't know their right from their left. He's going to open their eyes and bring them back to himself. He's going to marry them. As Paul said, all Israel shall be saved. Not some of them. You see? There's no contradiction there. You just have to understand it properly. So you have to understand what he's saying here. Ultimately speaking, if some of you are totally going to reject the kingdom of God and its teachings and commandments in obedience to it, you'll be, you know, thrown into the lake of fire. In between, you're not going to be in the first resurrection. You're going to be in the grave, wait, you know, awaiting another 1,000 years. You see, when he could have been in the kingdom at the time Christ came to rule this earth, you know, 1,000 years earlier. So, you know, you have to understand the entirety of the story to really begin to comprehend what you're reading. And most people don't have that knowledge and understanding. In verse 13 he says, then Jesus said to the centurion, go your way, as you have believed, in accordance to your faith, so let it be done for you. You see, it's your faith and your obedience that made the difference. And his servant was healed that same hour. And he found out about it, you know, as he went back home. Verse 14, now when Jesus had come into Peter's house, he saw his wife's mother. Well, he's Peter married. And the so-called the Peters in Rome don't get married. Why? That's contrary to the law. They supposedly are the followers of Peter, and he was married. There's no celibacy in the religion of God. You see? Now you have some people that, because they want to totally devote themselves to God, you know, they say, okay, I'm going to forego marriage and sex, and I'm going to totally give myself to you. You see? A few people like that, like the Apostle Paul, especially when he thought that Christ was coming in his day. You see? Yeah, so he didn't want too much struggles and encumbrance, you know, of wife and children and worries and things like that. But God commanded man to marry, to reproduce himself. That was the first command. Be you fruitful and multiply. That's the law of God. That's how God reproduces himself, having sons and daughters in his own image and likeness. You see? And then, for that reason, Paul said that there is that religion, mystery of, you know, the mystery of iniquity, you know, where they teach doctrines of demon. One of those doctrines is they forbid to marry. And here's Peter. He had a wife. You see? And he probably had children. Yeah, just not mentioned. And so it says, after all, you know, Peter here is not 18 years old, so he's been married already. And in those days, you know, you get married, and next year, you know, you've got a baby. You see? You've got children. People don't think about it. So he goes into his house, and he has a house, and he has a wife, and he has children. And he saw his wife's mother lying sick with a fever, so she was living with them. That was custom still to this very day among many. For the parents, obviously, the mother has no husband, so she lives with her daughter and son-in-law, you know, taking care of the children, grandchildren. And so he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she arose and served them. Simple as that. You see, when the Master, when the Adon, when the King of Israel, when the Redeemer who says, I am the Lord, or I am Jehovah that heals you, I am the healer. That's one of his titles, the healer of Israel, the physician, the great physician. And he was doing just that, healing members of his wife. You see? And people don't see it that way because they're of another spirit, a false religion. And Christ made it abundantly throughout the scriptures. They are the children of light and the children of darkness. And the children of darkness are of that another spirit that appears as an angel of light. And his ministers appear as ministers of righteousness, and he has many of them. That's why it says the devil, as he revealed to John at the end of time, you know, in the book of Revelation, the devil deceives the whole world. He could have said some of them, but he said all of them. You see, with the exception, obviously, of the election, of the very few who go through the narrow road throughout the history of Israel, it was a minority of them that were obedient to God. And there were sometimes, you know, only very, very few of them, only one prophet, you know, would be true, and the overwhelming majority of their prophets were false prophets, you see, and very few that followed the truth. There was always a little remnant, but it was always a little remnant. It's not a huge conglomerate religion made of hundreds of billions, millions of people. It has never been the majority. It was always the minority. Even in Sinai, only the few of them were obedient to God. Most of them were always rebel rousers. And God had patience with them, and if not for his patience and mercy toward them, would have destroyed all of them in the wilderness, as he said many times, he wanted to do it. And that's unfortunately the way the history of Israel has been recorded. You read through all the prophets and through the book of the law. And to this very day, things have not changed. That's why Christ was saying, you know, but most people, he said, they go by the broad way, not the narrow road, because the narrow road is very hard, and only very few are willing to go through it and pay the price for it, the ultimate price, every day of their life, to put their, you know, their life on the line. Most people don't like to do it. They want it the easy way. Just sit in your rocking chair, you know, believe in Christ. He did it all for me. It's done all long ago. All I need to do is just live by faith, you know, be good. My own kind, you know, concept of good. You see, not God's concept necessarily, or a mixture of both. Believe by faith, you know, walk in faith alone and forget about all the rest. That's a majority. You see, that's why they really do not have a relationship with God. And his people, unfortunately, have not fully learned the lesson yet. God is going to have mercy on them, and he's going to heal all of them. As here, he's giving an example by healing the mother of Peter, and he healed the others also, to show the grace and the mercy of God even toward people who were not walking righteously with him. But ultimately, that's the reason why he came and gave his life, in order to heal his wife and build his church, which is his wife, his people Israel, and restore all of them to himself. As Paul said, all of Israel shall be saved. Not like that pagan doctrine of the go to hell or the go to heaven. The majority of people, and many of them tragically, without even realizing it, being Israelites, condemned the people that they thought were the only people of God, you know, in terms of Israel, the people of Judah, to consign them to hell, and they still do to this very day. You don't believe in Christ, you go to hell. You see? Babies, no babies, what do they care? You don't know Christ, you go to hell. You see? That's the demonic religion that the devil has fostered upon the face of the earth, and it comes in many faces and by many names. And he has inroads into every single religion, and he influences every single one of them that is upon the face of the earth. And even comes among the people of God who know the truth and know better, and tries to poison them as much as he can, and inject, you know, false prophets among them and false brethren, of which Christ warned them. Be careful. And so we continue here in verse 16. When evening had come, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed. A lot of people today who call themselves Christians who don't believe in that, they say, oh, well, that was just schizophrenia. You know, just in those days they knew nothing about psychology. You know, they were primitive people. They go to the primitive church. You see? That's how dark is the mind of man. These people were led by the Spirit of God, and they call them primitive. And so, you know, they thought, well, you know, they attributed everything to evil spirit because they were superstitious. They don't even believe what they read. And they call themselves, you know, by the name of Christ. And so all these people, they were demon-possessed. Literally, they were demon-possessed and influenced by demons. And he cast out the spirit. You see, the spirits, that is. That's what it says there. They were demon-possessed and there were spirits in them. And he cast them out. A lot of people today still have this problem today. Exactly the same. And people who do not believe in God, and especially those who are secular, you know, they attribute that only to some kind of mental problem, and they give them all kind of drugs and try to cure them and help them. And they don't realize that spirit beings mess up with our minds and cause people to do a lot of horrible things. That's the reason why people hear voices and affected by all kind of things like that and do horrible things now and then they don't know why they did it. The devil is still the same. Just like Christ is today, yesterday, and forever, still the same, so is the devil and his demons. They're still doing exactly what they've been doing at that time. And so it says here, he casts out the spirits with the word, his word, which is spirit, awesome, ultimate power, and he healed all who were sick. So they were demon-possessed, and there were those who were just plain sick, you know, all kind of physical ailments. That it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, that's in Isaiah 53, he himself took our infirmities, and speaking specific here about his people Israel, his wife. That's what Isaiah was writing about, the people of Israel. He's not talking about the Gentiles at this point. They will come later. And he himself took our infirmities and bore our sicknesses. He took it upon himself, you see, by the forgiveness that he's going to offer them, by the shedding of his own blood, and also literally by healing them and removing them. And ultimately on the cross, he literally took them upon himself and he paid the penalty of sin which brought upon them to begin with all these evils. Be it the physical illness because we disobey the laws of God about health of our body or the health of our mind. Now, verse 18, and when Jesus saw great multitude about him, he gave a command to depart to the other side. And then a certain scribe came and said to him, Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. Now, that's a typical attitude on the part of many. You know, they're sincere. They've got, you know, certain moments in their life where they're willing to forsake everything. But do they really mean it? The day after and the day after. You see? And so Christ replies to him. He doesn't say, okay, follow me. Hey, that's wonderful. Thank you. Praise the Lord. You see? As many people act in that manner. No, he's not really encouraging him to do it. knowing his heart. And Jesus said to him, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. In other words, when you follow me, you're not going to have easy time, beautiful time, glory time, you see? So you better consider that and count the cost before you follow me. And that's the way the true ministers of Jesus Christ speak to those who want to follow Christ. It's not just, you know, for the sweet, nice feelings, you know, the good emotional, sentimental feeling. You're going to have to count the cost. It's going to be heavy. It's going to be painful. And you're going to have to sacrifice your body every day. Present your body a living sacrifice every day, as Paul would say to the Romans in chapter 12. That's not easy. So you don't want people just to begin, you know, the journey and then fall by the wayside, because after that they're gone. As God made it very plain and Christ made it very plain, those who begin to follow me and then turn away, they're not worthy of me. And he's not going to deal with them again. You see? So he does not want just anybody to follow him, but the people who are willing to follow all the way, against all the odds, going against the stream. And most people don't like to function like that. That's the reason why he says that. And so you don't see that man after that saying, oh, no, I don't care, you know, I'm going to follow you no matter what. You don't see that. And that person probably decided to do something else instead. So the expression of religiosity, no matter how sincere it is utterly meaningless to Christ, to God, if you don't have what it takes to back it up, if you're not totally going to be willing to give your life and take the cross, in other words, be willing to suffer and go through much tribulation. As Paul said, it is through much tribulation that we must enter into the kingdom. Be willing to take that burden, you see, or as Christ said, that it is the will of the Father to give you the kingdom, but with persecution. And if you're not willing to do that, you know, all of your religiosity and your sincerity are totally meaningless. That's why a lot of people, you know, who would come to Christ at the end time, they were of that nature. You see? Just for the easy times they were there, not for the hard times. They were not willing to suffer, even though very few of them are able to do it and willing to do it, but the majority are not. That's the nature in man. As soon, you know, things get tough, you know, you take off. God is not interested in people like that to follow him, and he's not going to begin a relationship with people like that. And that's why the Father selectively chooses the ones that he wants, you see, and he gives them to Christ, and he reveals his Son in them. As the Apostle Paul made very plain to the Galatians, that when it pleased the Father to reveal his Son in me, that's when he began his relationship with God. He cannot just join. He cannot volunteer. You cannot say, here, Lord, I am. Here I am. I'm going to follow you. If the Father hasn't initiated the process, knowing what kind of a person you are, and knowing that he's going to be with you, you cannot follow Christ. So this one, you know, person wanted to follow Christ, and Christ did not encourage him to do so. You see? That's why he told him that. You better count the cost. Not everybody can follow me. You know, are you willing to have this kind of life like I do? We are not here for the money and the glory and the fame. You see? And that person probably, you know, whoever that person is, just decided to do something else instead. And then verse 21, then another of his disciples said to him, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. Now here it is, one of his disciples. Following him for quite a while all this time. But he still has conditions. Now that's his condition. Let me go first and bury my father. I still have to do things. You know, I cannot follow you all the time, you know. Now and then there will come things that will come between us, and I'll opt for the other things and leave you. And then, well, you know, when things are okay, I'll come back to you. Now what is it that Christ tells him? Christ tells him, as we read in verse 22, but Jesus said to him, follow me. In other words, you follow me and forget about everything else. And he's speaking about an attitude here, that when you begin to follow me, all the way you do it. Forget about your father and your mother and all that. And he's not talking about the fact that people should dishonor their parents, you know, when you know, somebody died in the family. Now, that's not the issue here, you see. People who know, do not understand, cannot read between the lines, they don't understand what they're reading here. What he's talking about here, when you begin to follow God, You continue until the end and you don't let anything come in between. You see, so this is just an example here. But that was not the issue, the fact that he just wanted to go and, there was a funeral at home, his father died, he wants to bury him. You see, that's not the real issue here. And that's why he replies in that manner. He says, you follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. You see, that was the issue, that when you begin to follow a living Christ, you don't hang around among dead people anymore, dead in sin, who walk in another way, another path. You see, now all these people are all his own people, the people of Israel. And yet he gives him an example. And he gives all of us an example. You don't just sign in a little piece of paper there, because if you had an emotional moment at a certain point in your life, and you say, well, I'm going to give my heart to the Lord. You see, he's not interested in people like that. To begin with, he's not going to have a relationship with you unless the Father gave you to him. And then revealed his son in you. And then you begin to walk a way of holiness and righteousness, and you divest yourself of your path and your way. And if need be, if it is contrary to him, your friends and your relatives and your father and mother and everybody, and just forsake everyone and follow him. That is, if they stand in the way, if they try to tempt you, to entice you, to continue to walk in their old way. If they don't, it's not an issue there. So you have to understand what Scripture is talking about here, what Christ is talking about here. You see, he doesn't tell you just, begin to get rid of your wife and children and father and mother and all that just because, they have not been called and they don't understand. That's not what he's talking about here. If they're going to be a stumbling block, if they're going to prevent you from following God, you forsake them. You see, and in those days, the father was extremely important, the mother was extremely important, the family was extremely important, and Christ is making a point here. You either follow me, you see, or you follow them. That's what he's talking about. He's not talking about the ceremony itself, the burial, and the need to be there. He's talking about a state of mind. Whom are you going to follow? You cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot serve two masters. You see, that's what he's talking about here, and that's the issue. You have to understand it properly. That's why he says, let the dead bury their dead. You see, you walk among the living, you walk with the living, you stick, with the living, and remain and follow. And in essence, that was the problem here. It was an attitude problem, a state of mind. And then we continue here in verse 23. Now when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him, and suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea. That was not a coincidence. Because Christ was going to prove a point here to them and help them along the way, in their weak faith, to understand, to comprehend. That's how he builds a relationship with us. He allows us, he causes us to go through all kind of trials. That's what he says, the Father will give you the kingdom, but with persecution. And some of those God himself is going to cause to come upon us, to test us and to prove us, as he told the people of Israel, that he made them go through the wilderness for 40 years, in harsh conditions, now and then. They were thirsty, they were hungry, they were sweaty, they were hot, you see. And he did it, he said, all in order to test them and to prove them whether they would follow God or not. And a lot of people, when all those trials come upon us and could come in every conceivable form, which only God himself can decide on, and we don't know why. And instead of understanding that I'm being tested by God, and God is in absolute charge of the living and the dead. He can bring them to life any time if he chooses to take somebody away from us. And it's, most people, they're angry with God. They're upset. They don't understand, you see. And some, just say, who needs God? I don't need God. Well, who does these kind of things to me? And they blame him and accuse him, you see. And then, after a while, they just forget all about it. And they don't have a passionate, fiery a relationship with God, because he just didn't do what they wanted him to do for them. You see, he's not interested in this kind of people. And so now and then there are going to be trials, and this is one of them here. And suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea, so that the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. You see, it's not a coincidence. He knew what was going to happen. The Father knows what was going to happen. The Father is involved here in this process of what is happening here while Christ is asleep. Because both the Father and Christ are dealing with us on a personal basis all the time. It's not only one of them, you see. And all that for the sake of the disciples. So they would know who that person, that Christ that they were with all the time. And develop faith and trust in God no matter what happens. Because not even the grave can snatch us from his hands. You see, because he's in charge of life. And when people develop this kind of an attitude, no matter what happens, no matter how many calamities and sufferings and sorrow come upon us, we don't give up because we know God. We know his love, we know the end result, we know his nature. And we know that all those things are a part of the journey. You see, that's a part of the deal that he commanded us to be willing to take upon ourselves. That's the cross that we have to carry. And when people have not sat down and counted the cost to begin with, and when those things come, they already say, I know what it is all about, no matter how painful it is. You see, as Job said, though he slays me, yet I will, you know, follow him or worship him or love him. You see? So it doesn't make any difference what God brings upon us. We have to continue and stick to it until the end. Yet most people are not that kind of a people. They don't have that kind of a nature. They just want to, you know, go for the hoop line for the good times, you know, singing and laughing and rejoicing and praising the Lord and doing all kind of things like that. And they feel good about it. Oh, how good it is to serve the Lord, you know, they say. And then when a horrible calamity comes upon them, you see, they turn their back on God, or they hate him, or they're angry with him. You see, that's the kind of people most of us are, and God is not interested in people like that. He's going to deal with this kind of people, which are the majority at the end time, bring them, you know, to himself, yes. He's not going to give up on them either. But at this time, in this present time, until it's coming, he had chosen only a select few, not many. That's why he said, many are called, but only few are chosen. He's not interested in everybody. And people haven't got that yet, and they think, oh, that's the time, let's go conquer the whole world for Christ. And Islam says, let's go conquer the whole world for Islam. You see, for Allah and Muhammad. And all religions on the face of the earth, you know, to one degree or the other, have those aspirations. And if they have the power, they'll do it. They'll make everybody else follow them. God is not interested in that, and people don't know the plan of God. This is not the time for everybody. This is the time for the few. You see, because only the few are willing to totally give it all up and follow God no matter what and pay the price day by day and present their body a living sacrifice. And so here it is, one of those examples for all of us to read and to learn a lesson from. And in specific, that was for the disciples at the time. And suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea so that the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. And then his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we are perishing. What does that mean, we are perishing? How are they going to perish when the Son of God is right there with them? Where was faith? Where was the knowledge that, you know, they don't have to fear when they follow him? You see, it wasn't there. They panicked. All of us are human beings. We panic now and then. But we have to come back to ourselves and realize and say, hey, you know, cool it off. Take it easy. Hold back. Don't prejudge. Don't misjudge. Wait on God. Trust in him. You see, cry to him with all of your being and heart. And it will help you go through it, not necessarily take it away from you, but help you go through the tempest. And Christ was teaching them a lesson, and God was teaching them a lesson, and all of us are being taught lessons throughout life when we walk with God. And that's what he's saying here. Lord, save us, we are perishing. But he said to them, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? That was the problem. It was not the storm. You see, it was not death that was coming upon them. It was a little faith. And a little faith means little obedience. A total faith means total obedience to God and submission to whatever comes. As the friends of Daniel said, we're not going to bow down before you, you know, and if God doesn't choose to deliver us, let it be so. You see, so be it. And God delivered them, not before they were thrown into the furnace of fire, but after. You see, most people would say, well, they're gone. God forsook them. Some would say in their ignorance, well, he couldn't deliver them. He's not that powerful. You see, that's what Nebuchadnezzar and all the rest, you know, thought about it. Well, we're going to throw you into the lake of fire, you know, here, fire furnace. Let's see what God is going to do. Well, he told them a lesson, what he was going to do. And so that's what he says here. That's a problem. And so when we find ourselves in this state of mind, that's our problem, because we are not obedient to God. You know, wishy-washy kind of a relationship, you know, only for good times, only when we feel like it, only when it feels good, and who cares about the Lord to begin with? And after that, all kind of problems come our way, and then we wonder, where is God? Everybody says, where is God when a calamity comes upon a nation or a people or a family or an individual? That's the first thing. Not where is me, not where was I all this time, not what was my relationship with God all this time? Have I been obedient with my whole being and heart? Am I establishing a track record here so that when I call on God, he hears my voice and delivers me, as David always said? And did not deliver him necessarily from the trial. He allowed him to go through it, and he helped him in the end. You see, after he made him go through a number of trials and afflictions. That's a part of the course. That was a problem. That's our problem. Little faith. We're not willing to obey God. Only when it feels convenient. And that's the reason why they panicked. And so it says, that's what he says to them. Why are you fearful? You have no business being fearful. But if you are disobedient, you know that you're going to be fearful. You see, that's as simple as that. And then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. They should have known it all along. You see? And they hadn't done that. All they had to do was just go to Christ and plead with him, help us. You know, we know you can do all things. We trust in you, and we wait on you. We believe in you. We're not afraid. With you, with us, the Lord is my shepherd. Whom shall I fear? As David would say, they didn't have, that attitude. And most of us don't either. When calamities come, the first thing we do, we panic. And then we begin to point the finger at God when things went wrong for us. Verse 28. When he had come to the other, in verse 27, so the men marveled, saying, who can this be, that even the winds and the sea obey him? You mean by now you still don't know who this person is? They've been walking with him all this time. He already performs certain miracles here and there. But you see what happens when people do not obey God? They don't have that faith planted in their hearts and minds to fully comprehend and understand that. And here it is. All of his disciples were in this predicament at this point. Those who were walking with him were in that predicament. Well, you can imagine all those who do not. In what predicament would they be if they do not obey God? And yet, on the other hand, if they obey God, whether they are walking with him personally, physically, you see, literally, or whether they walk in him in spirit, they are not going to fear. And there are people like that. No matter what comes, they are not afraid. You see, they have an absolute conviction. And in essence, all those suicide bombers, they are putting an awful lot of so-called Christians to shame. Look how they are willing to give their own life without fear. As some have described, when they met people like that in Afghanistan, they smile at you when they know their death is coming upon them. Because their conviction is so powerful in that, pagan doctrine that they have of going to paradise immediately as they die, they're not afraid. And look at us. Wimps. And we call ourselves, many of us, Christians. You see? Even among the righteous. That's what Peter was doing. He forsook Christ when his skin was on the line, his life. And that's the way all of us are, you see. When in their own mind, they feel that they're absolutely obedient to their God, and so they're willing to go all the way to their death without fear. Of course, some of them are just insane. Mentally and spiritually, therefore they do those kind of things, but others, with absolute conviction. And so, here it is, they're marveling instead of just taking it for granted. He's the Son of God, he can do all things. If we believe in him, all things can be done. With God, all things are possible. What's the problem? You see, they haven't thought that way. They were not at this point at that state of mind. Verse 28, when he had come to the other side, to the country of the Gergeshens, there met him two demon-possessed people. There were demon-possessed. There were a lot of demons around, because whenever the people of God are, wherever the Son of God is, wherever God does his work, all the demons congregate around. And that's why there are a lot of problems around. And that's why a lot of people, are mentally imbalanced, are always around you, spiritually imbalanced, and confused people. Always like to congregate, hang around, the people of God. And that's what was happening there too. There were so many demon possessed, you know, in the land when, you know, because you know the demons knew Christ is going to be around here. And he saw those two people who were demon possessed coming out of the tombs. You know, they were in the cemetery, exceedingly fierce, so that no one could pass that way. And suddenly they cried out, saying, "That is the demons, not the people." You know, they were using the voice of the people, but it was the demons. "What have we to do with you, Jesus, you Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time?" Now, the demons recognize him. They acknowledge him as the Son of God. A lot of people think, well, just because I acknowledge Jesus as the Son of God, I'm a Christian. Well, here it is, demons doing it. So it doesn't mean anything when you acknowledge Jesus Christ as the Son of God. It doesn't mean anything when you worship him. It doesn't mean anything when you praise him and honor him, but only when you obey him. Otherwise, it's all in vain. That's why he says to his people, you know, "In vain do you worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men." Now, when you obey my commandments, it's a different story. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point again. This is Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.